Welcome back to the Short Pour Saloon Podcast. My name is Joel Penfield, joined by Philip Slavin, as always. How are you doing tonight?
Steal that from my good friend Levi Stevenson from Wide Right Netting Light. I'm JP. I'm not doing nearly as well as you probably are, with the Chiefs headed back to the Super Bowl for the second straight year.
You know, I love being a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs. I love having the best quarterback on the planet on my football team, and I cannot wait to beat that geriatric that plays for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2 weeks. It's going to be fantastic.
If this is – somebody made this joke on Twitter, and I love it. It's a great comp. This is feeling like one of those old Westerns where the young up-and-coming gunsman has to take down, you know, this whole posse, and there's always the – wannabe young gun, Josh Allen. Now you got to take out the old grizzled former sheriff or whatever.
It's just so funny to me how all season people, the Chiefs in a very short period of time, and Patrick Mahomes in a very short period of time, reached a point of greatness where the media and sports media decided, oh yeah, we need to pepper in some other people for discussion because we know who the best player is. But I mean, Lamar Jackson, I mean, he's obviously the best quarterback in the NFL, and he was awful against the Chiefs, and Patrick Mahomes proved his worth. Josh Allen has had 6 good games in his whole career. Clearly that's better than the 3 years of greatness Patrick Mahomes has had, but obviously Josh Allen's better, and he looked awful tonight. The best play that Josh Allen made all night was he was nearly on the ground and threw the ball 50 yards out of the back of the end zone when it was already a 3-score game. Whatever. Like, we've reached a point where people are just bored with how good the Chiefs are. And honestly, I'm here for it. I get to be a fan of the enemy for the next 15 to 20 years. I'm good with that.
Yeah, not a bad thing. Not a bad thing at all. Congrats to Chiefs fans. I will be easily rooting for Chiefs. I think most people, here's the thing. People love the Chiefs until they go win like 3 in a row, and then everyone hates dynasties, so just get ready for it.
I think people already hate the Chiefs. I think we've already reached that point.
This is Chiefs. Like, they're going to try and sell. All I know is this. I don't want to listen to any NFL podcast or anything for the next 2 weeks because I don't need to hear about Tom Brady, Tampa Bay, first home team to host. Like, I don't want to hear any of this crap.
It doesn't matter. The Chiefs already went into Tampa Bay and boat raced them until it looked close at the end. This is not an NFL podcast. Yeah. I'm just way too excited, and I also am way too confident in my team.
If this was New England with Belichick, I would be scared because Belichick knows how to scheme away the best thing, whatever it is that you do best. The Bucs beat Green Bay because Green Bay's coach is bad and because their starting left tackle was out for this game. And the Bucs D-line is really, really good. And so what happened? That's what happened. End of story. Also, the refs didn't want to call any sort of defensive anything until –
yeah, they let him be physical until Tom Brady went, oh, right, I need my bailout call, and here we go.
Look, it was defensive – it was pass interference. We're not arguing that it wasn't pass interference. The problem is that you ignored it up until that point.
Yeah, like I won't argue the validity of the call. It absolutely was pass interference. But right. You look at about the 15 holding calls that Sean Murphy bunting and Carlton Davis got away with for the entirety of the game. But then the minute there's a jersey tug, oh, 15 yards. All right, cool.
Helps out Tom. Shocker there.
Yeah. It's okay. Tom Brady can enjoy being the GOAT for about the next 15 years. When Patrick Mahomes retires, he'll be number 2.
Yeah. Very nice. Okay. Should we talk some Oklahoma State now?
Yeah, I'm good to do that now. I needed to get my takes off at least, you know, just a little bit. Moving on, Philip and I meant to do this on our last episode. We apologize for not recording last week. Philip and I's schedules were a little odd, and we couldn't quite find a time to record. But we're going to have 2 episodes up this week. We'll have this one that you're hearing on Monday, and then we'll have another one on Thursday. with a guest. We have a really cool guest lined up. We're excited about what that one's going to offer. So we'll have two episodes for you this week. Don't expect two episodes in the future. It's just we at least want to get something out there for you guys. On the previous episode,
yeah, do not expect two episodes a week. Right now. Goodness.
As we meant to have in the last episode before we got way too into the weeds talking about it, all the entirety of about 3 weeks of Cowboy basketball, we wanted to put a bow on the end of Cowboy football, the 2020-2021 season, and we wanted to do our version of like the end of season awards for Cowboy football. We came up with about six or seven categories, and we're each going to give our takes. We agree on some. But we're going to do this as a little segment to end the football season, and then we can just move right into 2021 here in the next couple months when spring ball starts and with the schedule comes out and more stuff like that.
Quiet.
All right.
Should we rock and roll? Let's
rock and roll. So it's very easy to do like MVP, like most valuable player, which is super subjective, you know, what your like definition of the V and like what valuable is. Yes. So instead, because it'd be very easy to just give it to Tylan Wallace and just end the discussion, but that's not fun radio for us. So we decided to do it as the offensive player with the most impact. So the offensive impact award. And I'll let you go first here. I think we agree on where we're going to go with this, but I'll let you introduce it here.
Well, okay, so you're going to see something similar between my offensive player and my defensive player. So let me start with offense. Offense, I think we agree. Like, agreed. Tylan Wallace, we get it. As soon as he got into games, he took over. He would make plays that were ridiculous. Yes. But to me, impact-wise, the guy that was the biggest impact, whether he was on the field or specifically when he was off, was Tevin Jenkins. Offensive line, the struggles were due to a lot of things, attrition being one of them. When you think about it, you lost three guys before the season, two guys basically for the season in the first game against Tulsa. You had other guys drop due to injury, guys in and out. Tevin Jenkins played hurt in games because he just wanted to play. Dude's about to be probably the first-round draft pick. I think most mock drafts at this point have him on the back end of the first round. He's arguably the best offensive lineman Oklahoma State's had since Russell Okung. And I think offensive line outside of quarterback is the most important position group on offense. And he was your best one. Josh Sills was great. Ry Schneider was good. Other guys who all stepped up and played really well. But Tevin Jenkins to me is the guy who the offense was at its best when he was there. And when he wasn't able to be on the field, you noticed the stark difference. So for me, it's Tevin Jenkins.
In general, offensive line is a very thankless job. You don't notice what the offensive line does unless they make a mistake, when they let up a sack or just whiff on a block. But if you actually go through and over the course of 3+ seasons, you watch what Tevin Jenkins did on the offensive line. He mauled dudes. He took away some of the best defensive linemen in the Big 12 and like they were nothing. If you need any indication, I'll find the video and I'll retweet it when this podcast goes up. But Joseph Osai, who's an edge for Texas, a defensive lineman, defensive end edge for Texas, who's a consensus end of the, you know, mid to the end of the first round, kind of where Jenkins is at, first round pick. Jenkins threw him around like he was a lawn chair all game long against Texas earlier this season. And Osai is a big, strong dude, and Jenkins just took him to town all game. He was the best and most impactful offensive player for Oklahoma State this season, all year long. And his presence was obviously felt when he was gone because you didn't have that mauler dude. Now, a ton of credit goes to the dudes that filled in because the offensive line was still serviceable when he was out, but they were at their best when you had him at left tackle for this team. And he may kick into side to guard, and then when he goes to the NFL, he is going to make a lot of money for a very long time in the NFL.
Yeah, and look, it's not just that he was so good. Like, he was also versatile. Like his versatility, being able to move around, like it's just he is the best offensive lineman Oklahoma State's had since Russell Okung. It's not close. I think he is a first round draft pick, if not at worst, he's a early second rounder. Like unless his measurables for the combine are terrible. You draft this guy, he's gonna be good for you.
Yeah, if he tests well the combine, he's gonna be a first round pick. Even if he tests like slightly worse than people thought he would, and the combine's gonna be weird this year because it's virtual, but held at wherever the guy went to school or wherever, he's gonna be fine, and he's at the worst gonna be an early day two pick in like the beginning of the second round. He won't make it past the third. I've listened to a lot of like mock drafts and podcasts and stuff talking about the NFL draft and people that follow the draft. They love him, and he's going to go very mm-hmm. early in this draft, and teams are going to be able to get a dude that can play outside and inside and just maul people from the very beginning. So look out for him
on an NFL offensive line where he doesn't have to be like the only NFL offensive lineman on there.
Yeah. Doing all the work. I've heard a lot of people talk about him kicking inside to guard, which I don't think would be a bad thing. Like moving mm-hmm. him to like left guard, and yeah, he'll just destroy people on run blocking. My God.
To me, it's going to be awesome. Yeah. Okay.
Let's move on to defense here.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first on this one. So this is our defensive impact player again, or the most impactful player on the defense. And the guy I'm going with is Trace Sterling. He may not have had the best statistical year, quote unquote, by any Oklahoma State player. But if you look at the way that Jim Knowles used him throughout the year, he was a deep safety playing center field. He would guard guys out of the slot. They would use him at linebacker. He'd play on the line of scrimmage, guarding, taking running backs or tight ends out of the backfield. He'd blitz. He's almost like the way that the Chiefs use Tyrann Mathieu, like a honey badger style where he can just do just about anything your defense needs to do as a safety. He can play deep. He can play in man. He can play in zone. He can play a slot corner. He can rush off the edge. He can play the run. He can play the pass. And the way he plays downhill, he's going to make a lot of money in the NFL. His run fits are ridiculous as a safety. The angles he takes, the way he hits, and he's coming back for his senior year. He's going to get first or second round money, I think, if he continues on the trajectory where he is at. But the versatility of Trace Sterling is why I have him for my biggest impact player on defense this season.
So I don't want to like tell you you're wrong, but the whole like didn't put up the stats. He was third in total tackles at 74, second in solo tackles at 51. He led the team in tackles for loss at 12.
I don't know if tackles for loss. Shit. Okay.
Yeah, he led the team in tackles for loss.
Okay.
At 12, the next closest I think was Tyler Lacy had 8. Mm-hmm. No, okay. Calvin had 8.5. Two interceptions, 4 pass breakups, 1 quarterback hurry, and 2 fumble recoveries. So compared to you, my guy, significantly lower stats. 18 total tackles. 1 tackle for loss. 7 pass breakups. 1 forced fumble. But there's a reason that his numbers were so low. Re'Darius Williams was one of the best corners in the Big 12 this year. He didn't get the credit he was due. Now, why do you think that would be? Why are his stats so low? Because he was so good, and this is why I don't understand it, teams would not throw his direction. Teams didn't want to throw at Re'Darius Williams. They would throw to the other side of the field because they didn't want to deal with throwing to him because they knew it was a waste of time. That's how good he was. But Jerick Bernard Converse had a really nice season. Christian Holmes was – I'm glad he's coming back. It's good depth for the team. But Re'Darius Williams was so good on this team that other opponents did not even want to throw to his direction. Similar to Tevin Jenkins in the conversation of you really saw the impact when he was out. Re'Darius Williams played in 9 games. He was in and out of games being beat up because he got injured. And when he was out for this defense suffered. Jim Knowles' defense is predicated, his ability to bring pressure, and use the safeties in the way he likes to, is to let the corners play on an island and not have to provide support to them. When you have a corner that teams don't want to throw to, you can have a gnarly defense that's aggressive and goes after the quarterback. It forces tackles for loss. You can have the style of defense that Jim Knowles wants to have. When you don't have a corner that people don't want to throw to and it needs more help, you can't do that as effectively as you would like. When he was out, the defense was not as good. It's not because they were less talented. They were, because you never play Darius Williams, but the scheme doesn't work as well. Where Darius Williams was the most important player on this defense, he was the piece that allowed the defense to be at its best, because he was a stud, an underappreciated stud. I think he will get drafted. I don't think it will be in a first, second, third. I think it will be one of the later rounds, but I think Darius Williams is going to get drafted. I made my prediction at the beginning of the year that OSU would have the most players drafted in the modern draft era. That would have to be five or more. Most ever has been four, two times. Five would be it. I think he will be one of the five. I think he gets drafted. I think he's really stinking good. I don't understand how the all Big 12 stuff, postseason, whatever.
The fact that Trey Sterling was on fourth team all Big 12 is just, that shows that it's a sham. It's a freaking joke.
I do think there were a lot of really good DBs in the Big 12 this year. I will say this, there were a lot of good DBs. I think a lot of teams, I think sometimes record plays into who gets what too much. OSU's defensive players deserve more credit than they got. Rodarius Williams was so dang good. And he didn't, it's one of those things like, why did he put up stats? Because literally no one was going to give him an opportunity because no one was going to throw to him. Like that's the takeaway. So that's who my guy is. He's a guy that I really like heading into the year. I'm very excited to watch what he does in the NFL. Like, he's a guy whose career I'm very closely going to be watching, because he is really underrated.
Yeah. And I think you could have gone so many different directions with the way the defense played pretty much all season. I think you could have gone with Amen Ogbong Bamiga. Colby Harvell Peel had a good year. Malcolm Rodriguez was awesome. We'll see him again next year. There were so many guys that we could have gone to, but I think the two that we chose are probably the guys that had the biggest impact this season. But that doesn't take away from any of the other guys on a really awesome Oklahoma State defense.
Oh, that's great. Great defense this year. Great. I know that statistically, I think 2013 was still like better, but I don't care.
Yeah.
This was the best defense. It was the most fun defense to watch. It was the most, I keep forgetting that there's a study story I want to go write, and I need to go track. Like, I'm pretty sure that in turnovers, in like scoring off of turnovers, that the defense outscored the offense. In fact, I'm not pretty sure. I don't have to look, and I know the answer is going to be that they did. I'm going to go confirm by how much, like, which will play into what we're talking about later on. But yeah, this defense was so fun, and I don't think it's going to have a massive drop off next year. The concern is at corner. Christian Holmes is back. Jared Bernard Converse is solid. Guys like Thomas Harper got a lot of play. Got a lot of young guys coming up. Corner is going to be it. Like I said, if you want in Jim Knowles' system to be able to apply the pressure he likes to run, you need to have a Rodarius Williams out there. So, Jared Bernard Converse, it's your turn, sir. It's your turn.
All right, now let's go into our coach of the year. Talking about this is a positional coach award here for this. And I think, and we agree on this, it's Charlie Dickey.
Damn straight it is.
When you think about the attrition that this position went through for the entirety of the season, not even just the beginning, it was all year, and your top guy goes out in Tevin Jenkins, and you have to reshuffle the line again at the end of the season, and the way they played down the stretch without a guy like that tells you the level of coaching that Charlie Dickey is doing for these guys. Now, he got Jake Springfield back, who went out early on in the season. Cole Birmingham.
Well, and Springfield. They lost Springfield.
For a period of time as well. I was thinking about him because I know that he filled in for Cole Birmingham at left tackle. But then in the bowl game, you got Cole Birmingham back, who shifted to guard. You get Josh Sills back. This is a group that's going to be really good next year. guys that got thrown into the fire that probably weren't ready, that by the end of the year were giving legitimately good reps in run and pass blocking. It says so much about what he's doing. From a recruiting perspective, I don't know, but I know the dudes he gets on campus, by the time they're sophomores, they are ready to go and ready to plug and play. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. And all the credit in the world to him for what he did, because if we had a lesser offensive line coach that couldn't do what he does with these guys, I mean, this team would be so much worse off. I think we're seeing some of the best offensive lines Oklahoma State has had since Joe Wickline was here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's nothing else I can really say. Like we'll put somebody, true freshman Eli Russ played in 7 games. Okay. Like, you had to play a true freshman. That you just we kept thinking the offensive line was the problem. By the end of the year, we realized the offensive line really wasn't the problem. They just had to deal with a lot of stuff, and Charlie Dickey handled it incredibly. I don't think we can give him enough credit for the job he did, like, at all, for what all they dealt with. Folks, Oklahoma State's not too deep with or three deep with studs at every spot on the line. Like, you need to have, as Alan Lunt says, like, you want to be like 8 deep. You lost 3 guys from the start before the season even started. Like, 2 of them were projected to be starters, and you had a solid backup. Then you lose 2 guys who were playing, I think, who were starters for you in the first game for the rest of the season. Before you got to game 2, 5 guys on your offensive line roster were gone. You're too deep. It's literally like that's not something you bounce back from easily. And they played well. And I get it. Like, they did. Like, I don't know how better to be like, look, other guys did a good job. But no one did a better outside of Jim Knowles. Is my second place is Jim Knowles. Second place is Jim Knowles. The combination of the linebacking group was ridiculous. Now, part of that was they were all upperclassmen, but they were great. And most of the time, that's his position group. The defense was awesome. Full props to him. But Jolly Dickey did an amazing job, and I'm pumped to see what he can keep doing. I would like this. This is a problem for everyone. I get it. You have injuries on the offensive line. That's fine. Man, can we get it? Just help. Can we just have an offensive line for like most of the season? Not have multiple, just like a wave of injuries and problems. Can we just have 5 guys? That would be great. It would be great. It's a young. Look, including that extra year of eligibility, you can't consider anyone like what they really like. Juniors are all sophomores. If you want to really manage it correctly. So if you treat it that way, you've got true classes of true freshmen. You've got 5 redshirt freshmen, 4 sophomores, and 2 seniors. You got a young group. They're going to be solid because of all the things they dealt with. They're going to be solid next year. 2022, they could all be really good. Charlie Dickey, I didn't love the recruiting class for 2021, but they could be pretty good this year. So props to him, man. If you're like, nah, I did a terrible job. Okay, cool. You should probably actually watch some football.
Yeah. Let's move on here to our favorite game of the season. And I'm going to go with the Iowa State game. That felt like a game that Oklahoma State probably should not have won, that did. It was Spencer Sanders first came back from injury. There were a bunch of turnovers. Like, it was kind of a brutal game to watch in a lot of ways, but you made Brock Purdy look really uncomfortable for most of the game outside of the final drive. The defense was really good. The offense was really good in spurts. I think that was the game for me. That was probably my favorite of the year. Mainly because we won. That was a lot of it too, obviously.
Yeah. Like, here's the problem is, you had a lot of ugly games like you just kind of had to deal with. It was a good game. And Iowa State turned out to be really good. So that just added to that, you know, the impact of that win at that point. It's a good win. You're the only Big 12 team in the regular season to beat Iowa State. They had that, you and Louisiana, so they lost to Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game. It's a nice win. It was a nice win for Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State was at its – coming off that extra long idle period because of COVID stuff, I think that was one of their better performances. It was an ugly game, but you know, you've got a 10-point lead. You like to win by that much. Wasn't that like the first of like three games in a row that I had to like deal with onside? I don't know. That was a solid game. It was a solid game. I'm going to go with one that's different.
Okay.
So Oklahoma State, Bill Connelly tracks his like, you know, post-game win expectancy numbers. He does it. So he put out an article at the end of the season that had the 10 games with the lowest post-win post-game win expectancy and a win for the year. Okay, so basically, who was the 10 luckiest teams by winning a game they absolutely shouldn't have won? So the LSU beating Florida, they had a 0.6% chance to win that game. 0.6% chance to win that game at one point in the game, and LSU won the game. So here's the downside. Oklahoma State was involved in two of the top 10.
Awesome.
They were in the losing side of one of them. Do you know which one that one was?
Texas?
It was Texas. TCU. Texas. Texas had a 2% chance to win at one point.
Sweet.
And OSU won. OSU did come out on the positive side of another game. Would you like to guess what which one that was?
K-State?
That is my game of the year. Oklahoma State had a 7% win expectancy. Bones game win expectancy in that game. 7% and went on to win. It was an ugly game. It was a gross first half. It was disgusting to watch. We were all angry as could be that you were trailing 12-0 to Kansas State. Needless to remind you, no Chuba, no Tylen. Tevin Jenkins got hurt. No Colby Harvell-Peel. They take that game. You get the first touchdown from Brendan Presley's career. Awesome. You get the comeback. Kansas State misses the 2-point conversion to tie the game. You hang on and win a game that you're down 12-0. You couldn't do anything offensive. Then you get that third, fourth quarter. You go from down 12-0 to up 20-12. That game was disgusting. But if you look in the season as a whole, because we're so used to these like 44-40 wins, that these 2018 grind out nonsense games just feel just gross. And they are, they're gross. They're like this is Big 12 porn or Big 10 porn is what we put on this year. But there's something about even a Kansas State team with a like true freshman, not very quarterback, I don't care. Winning a game that at one point you have a 7% chance of winning on the road at Kansas State was just kind of when you look back on it. So that in the end is that second half when you come out and come from down 12-0 to go up 20-12 is pretty nice. So I'm picking Kansas State.
I forgot how disgusting that game was.
That game was nasty.
It was awful.
It was awful. It was a terrible game.
So it was my birthday that day. And I was like, sweet, we need to go and play Kansas State. And then the minute I saw Talon Wallace was out, I was like, oh, God, this is going to be ugly and awful. And it sure was. But, man, that Jason Taylor scoop and score, look what I found. Just – I still can't believe that actually happened.
So, you know what? Let's just – now that since you mentioned that, let's hop in our next category, which is your play of the year. Number one for me, the Jason Taylor 85-yard fumble return that wasn't really like a fumble. Like it got – it bounced into – it literally never touched the ground, popped out, lands in his arms, and he runs it back 85 yards to put Oklahoma State up 20-12, which was the game-winning, which was the deciding score. I remember that play happening and just going, what? The football gods are on our side right now. Yeah. Because that does not happen. And as I recall correctly, Kansas State, like you, we were this at this point in the game, we're like, OSU's offense is stalled again. Because you kicked the field goal, or you got the field goal, you're up 13-12. A lot of time left in this game. Kansas. Yeah, to punt. Kansas State. It's first and 10 at their own 15. They get a 58-yard pass, couple of runs. They're at the OSU 28. You're just like, this is – they're going to score, and they're going to – nope. Will Howard tries to run it, fumbles. Israel Entwine pops it out. Taylor lands in Taylor's arms, runs it back 85 yards, and they win from that. Every top play for me this year pretty much would have been like – it would probably be like a defensive score because they were all amazing. But that one – that was the one for me. The thing is, stuck out more than anything else.
That one felt so poetic too, because it was on one of those stupid, like, unathletic, straight upright white quarterback delayed runs that K-State has beat people with for years, and the ball got popped out for a touchdown. It just felt so good that play didn't work for the first time in 20 years. Oh, it was so good.
Yeah, that was a beautiful thing.
Okay, so my play, it also involves Jason Taylor the second, and it was his kickoff return for a touchdown on the surprise onside kick by Texas Tech. And it was also a lot of it was one of those, like, how the heck did this happen? What did this dude do right with the football gods to just have the ball magically land in his hands in these opportune times? But also, it completely turned the tide of that game. Why Texas Tech went for the surprise onside kick when they did made absolutely no sense.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
It was.
They had all the momentum.
They had all the momentum in the world. And they tried to get more. They got greedy, tried to get more. And the ball just ends up in Jason Taylor's hands with no one in front of him. And we get the touchdown, which was awesome. And then I believe the next drive was the Trey Sterling pick six, which is two for me. But I think the Jason Taylor kickoff return was just more odd and weird, but it completely took the momentum right to Oklahoma State and completely turned the tide of that game. And that's why it's a huge reason why Oklahoma State won the way they did.
Yeah, Texas, I can just taking the lead. They're up 24-21. It was their, like, the first lead since they scored first. OSU been up 21-17. They get 24-21. They're feeling real good. Go for the onside kick. Oh, yes. Then you get the pick six by Trey Sterling. Good goodness, yes. That game, like, I'm really glad they beat Texas Tech. We needed to get those demons off of our backs of, like, let's not do that. The only thing that you had that game that irritates me to no end is you were up 50-31.
There was no reason that game should have been close.
You let them back into it and had to do the onside kick. And I was so irritated. Like, that game was over.
Yeah.
That game was over. There's just under 9 minutes to go. You're up 19 points.
One of my other, like, so I can go through a bunch of honorable mention, like, offensive plays, but the throw from Spencer Sanders to Tyler Wallace to the corner of the end zone on a dime to essentially kind of put the game on ice at that point, that was Spencer Sanders' best throw of the year by far. It was in the pocket on time.
He had a few really good ones against Miami. Throws against Miami that were Oregon State first game of his career level throws.
But I think the other one that sticks out in my head, and it was when I knew we were going to beat Tulsa, and it was Shane Illingworth, his first play of his career. He just throws up a ball to Tylan Wallace, and Wallace makes a ridiculous catch against Tulsa. And that's why I went, oh, we're going to go down and score here. And then they get the touchdown on Illingworth's first drive. That completely changed the complexion of that game because we watched Ethan Bullock for 2.5 quarters, and it was painfully awful. And that, like, just that throw just completely changed any sort of momentum Tulsa had in that game right away. And so that's always the one that sticks out of my mind too. I think Illingworth had his moments, you know, early on in the year. He looked rough against OU, but I at least still have that throw in my mind. I'm like, yeah, that completely changed the momentum of that game.
Defensive scores are so much fun. I would say other top plays for me, the Iowa State touchdown for Chuba where he, yes, you think he's going to go down, he's in a crowd of his players, hand like finger plants, props himself back up, like spin moves, goes to the other end of the field and gets in. That was the most athletic thing for a really good athlete. Like that play was just so good. So good.
LD Brown's 50-yard run against West Virginia was pretty awesome too, because then he hit the cabbage patch after.
There were some plays in that West Virginia game.
The pick six from Trey Sterling when he called a shot. That also, because he said, if they run that stupid out route, or that stupid in route, I'm going to pick it. And he did.
Yes. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And it was
– yeah, Brendan Presley's – like 50, like he had, well, that was what, like a 30 something yard touchdown against Miami where he made about four dudes look foolish.
Oh, yeah. Well, because so the other one for West Virginia was Tyron Irby's fumble return.
Oh, yeah.
That was the 56 yarder. Defensive touchdowns are so much fun. Yeah. Everything Brendan Presley did against Miami is up there. And every like defensive, I'm pretty sure like the only time Oklahoma State could score off of a forced turnover was if the defense did it. I'm pretty sure that I am right on this, outside of like one field goal. I'm pretty sure I'm right. I'm going to write that.
I'm going to go research it. Where we're at here. Okay. Our next category, if I can find it here, because this is fantastic radio. All right. Our last one, favorite uniform combo.
Two left. You have uni, and then let's do this. Do we want to do uni or do we want to do Twitter?
All right, so we'll do uni last. So our favorite player Twitter account, and for me it's Trey Sterling, because the way he interacts with fans I think is super cool. He's really funny and really kind of petty on Twitter, which I love, because he knows he's disrespected and he has no problem embracing that and then just showing everybody on the field like, oh yeah, I'm really freaking good. But I think the little Q&A stuff he does with fans, it's pretty cool the way he interacts with fans and embraces Oklahoma State, like the people that follow the team and stuff. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that one. I'm going with Kobe Harper-Peel.
Okay.
Lots of fun. He as we mentioned, did not play the Kansas State game and live tweeted the whole thing.
That was
very enjoyable. I might also slightly be biased here because he decided to he was going to go to the NFL and then reverse course and is now going back to OSU for a year, which is awesome.
God, the safety group of Trey Sterling, Tanner McAllister, and Colby Harville-Peel. Oh, fan me. Oh, my God.
Did you just vinegar strokes on the podcast?
Pretty close to it, yeah.
Okay. Well, then you throw in Jason Taylor.
Yeah. And Thomas Harper.
And Thomas Harper moved the corner.
He's played both.
Yeah, he goes both ways. So
either way, yeah. All right, let's end this thing with our favorite uniform combination. What do you got?
I have thought long and hard about this because I think there were some good ones.
Yes.
Some underappreciated ones. I liked the black, gray, black against Iowa State. I know not everybody likes the gray, but the gray, I think the gray jerseys look good, and plus I had Phantom Pete. I really liked all blacks, always good. I like the white, orange, white against Tulsa. That's like their go-to for like non-conference game, but they did the Patriot Pete, and so it's a very classic Oklahoma State look. I like that one. Very torn here. I'm gonna go with what I think are the best ones. And look, there's some really good helmets, but I mean, dude, the all white Thurman Thomas throwbacks against West Virginia.
Those were just awesome.
I feel like it's a lazy one to say, but those were immaculate. And look, and you'll probably mention one of these. Both of the cowboy cursive helmets they pulled out this year were awesome. I love Phantom Peak, but those Thurman Thomas throwbacks are, I mean, if you told me that they were just going to make the Barry Sanders and Thurman Thomas throwbacks like the new uniforms, guys, that would be fine with me. I would be perfectly okay with that. You know, no one in the world would ever be like, no, these are gnarly good. The cursive, you put cursive OSU on anything. Not cursive. You put the old school OSU logo on anything, and Futurama, take my money, Jeff, just all day in live action.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting to follow because we have reached the 5-year point of the uniforms we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And since the late 90s, early 2000s, Oklahoma State has done 5-year cycles with all of their uniforms. There is a decent chance if they continue that trend that by the spring of this year, we see new uniforms. Whether they actually will do that yet, I don't know. Obviously, we won't know because we have no connection to the university in that regard. But God, I hope they do some kind of like reverse retro kind of, where it's a little bit of the modern flair with that old school Thurman Thomas Barry Sanders era.
Oh, bring back the sleeve stripes.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Bring back the sleeve stripes. Bring them back.
But I'm going to go with another all-white combo, and I'm going to go with the ones that wore K-State with the cursive cowboy helmet. Oh, my God. Like, the cursive cowboy is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, logo for anything Oklahoma State. Whenever the basketball team wears it during the season, it's always one of my favorites. That uniform looks so good. I'm so glad the football team embraced it a little bit. They did it for the K-State game. They did it on the orange helmet for Baylor. The orange white orange looked awesome for that game. But the all white helmet and the surprise, I think it was a surprise element of seeing it for the K-State game that makes it better a little bit. I think that's what that's what makes that all white look. And the all white, I think, is probably the best next to the all black in the uniform set we have right now. And to see the cursive cowboys with the stripe, the black and orange stripe on the helmet with the cursive cowboy, it looks so good. I'm so glad they won that game because I not have wanted to just burn that helmet in a fire after they lost to K-State. They beat K-State. They look good in those uniforms. I want to see the cursive cowboy more in if we see a next uniform set or next year with the same set. I want to see at least once or twice next year because it looks good. Can you imagine a black helmet with the white cursive cowboys on there for home game?
He's still in my heart.
Oh my God.
I'll say this though. So I like the orange trim black cowboy cursive.
They wore it looked good. It looked really good.
White on orange is a really good look. Like white on orange. And here's the deal. The cursive cowboys they did for Bedlam or for Baylor had a black outline. I think drop the black outline. The ones they wore against Texas Tech, which is the orange white, and it's the white brand on the orange helmet. But there's no, it's just the white brand. Like it's not trimmed in black to make it pop. It's just the white on orange. It's not as discernible because it doesn't have the outline. But if you just slap straight white on orange or straight white on black. I miss the black-white combo. That would be an opportune time if they have to play a Friday night, Thursday night game to pull a – what was it? It was white-black-black, right?
I just want to see
– like, it was white-black-black.
Like a white-black-white. We've seen that once with this uniform set in 5 years. It looks awesome when they do it, and they don't do it. It's so frustrating because it's so good.
I just like it's kind of like I am ready for new unis just because there's certain combos that like I would be fine if you retired them. Like we don't need stop having games where you're like, well, we're gonna use our less popular combos. Stop having less popular combos. If you only have 4 combinations, but they're all awesome, then just have 4 awesome combinations. Like having all those combos is great unless half of them suck and then who cares, right? Like quality over quantity. Like don't get me wrong, but like what they were against Kansas, black, white, gray. It's fine. No one's clamoring for that. You know, I like black, gray, black. Let's just wear the classics. Wear what people want. I do like Patriot Pete. Make sure Patriot Pete stays in the arsenal.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm done.
Yeah. All right. We are going to take a break, and then we'll be right back. Talk some Cowboy basketball right after this.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, Phillips, since the last time we talked Cowboy basketball, they had beaten Kansas, and then they had to go into COVID-19 protocols. There was a positive test on the team, which knocked out the game against against OU it was last Saturday, and the midweek game. So they had a full week and a half at least to play Baylor, and they lose 81-66. Cade Cunningham does not play in that game due to COVID-19 protocols, which I'm still a little confused about. He seemingly was the one that tested positive or had symptoms based on contact tracing, something to that effect. And Oklahoma State played well, at least in the first half. They showed a lot of fight. Mike Boynton teams always do. But at the end of the day, it wasn't enough. Baylor is the second-best team in the country. You have the way college basketball seems this year, it's Gonzaga and Baylor. There's 50 feet of shit, and then there's everybody else. Like, if Baylor is that good, they're going to compete for a national title. Don't get too caught up in the result.
Bama's kind of good.
But, like, they're not – like, Gonzaga and Baylor on a different level than everybody else. They just are.
Yes.
I don't think – like, after those top
two – Bama can have a Bama Gonzaga level game. Like, I don't think you've watched any Alabama and Alabama. It's not right that Alabama should also have a basketball team that's that good, but they're pretty damn good this year. Like, they're pretty darn good this year.
Okay, my point stands. Baylor's really fucking good, and they showed it on Saturday. Jared Butler went absolutely nuclear in the middle of the second half, right, of course, coupled with the offensive lull that we see in the second half from Oklahoma State, but they didn't have a Cade Cunningham to try and end that run. And the game was what it was. The game was going to be tough with Cade Cunningham and Rondell Walker playing in that game. So I don't take a ton away from that result, because Oklahoma State probably wasn't going to win that game in the first place. And that's kind of how I look at it. Like, it's obviously frustrating the way that the game flipped that quickly, but not having Cade Cunningham, not having Rondell Walker, it was going to be tough. It's going to be tough sledding. And Oklahoma State played really tough for the first 30-ish minutes of that game and had Baylor really confused, and Baylor wasn't knocking down shots. The regression to the mean, swinging back toward Baylor, knocking down those open shots and rebounding the ball as well as they were. It affected Oklahoma State, and with eight scholarship players essentially playing seven guys for the majority of that game, Avery Anderson, Isaac Likely, and Bryce Williams all played 34-plus minutes. That's a tough formula to try and beat a team like Baylor. And that's what we saw. And there's not much you're going to do about that.
Look, I saw some people being like, oh, coaching, Boynton, blah. And I've seen people who are already kind of turning on Boynton. So we're going to do a little thing that I've put together here. First off, for this game, let's remember they had, and I'm going to throw air quotes, 8 scholarship players. They had 7 recruited scholarship players and D. Mitchell, who was on scholarship. And I don't mean that as a dig at D. Mitchell, but like he played 7 minutes. He literally was able to like rest players by playing 7 minutes. They had 7 scholarship guys. That means 6 guys that were supposed to be scholarship players on this roster at the start of the season were not available to play, either because of season-ending injury, leaving the team for personal reasons, COVID, or whatever other injury they're dealing with. Okay, you had 7 guys against the number 2 team in the country. The fact that they were in that game for as long as they were, do not come with coaching. Don't bring that crap at all. You don't. Save it. It's lazy, crappy takes. You're just being angry on Twitter. Stop it. Be better than that. That's garbage. If you want to take away from this game, it's this. Had they had Cade and Rondell, the run by Baylor was still going to come. OSU would have made a bigger push at the end, and they would have lost by less. Still probably lose this game. Okay? That's just the reality. Now, here's my thing. That is the latest issue the Boynton has had to deal with. Because I'm really on the, like, all you people who don't like Boynton. Oh, you can only use – he's Travis Ford 2.0 in your group. You can't coach. If you've listened to this pod, you've heard the things that we've talked about. Hey, it's a team that shoots, takes good shots, and can't hit them. They're hitting shots better. That is coaching. Taking good shots, even if you're not a great shooting team, but making sure you take good, efficient shots, that's good coaching. The other one I saw, and I need to make sure I remember who put it out there because I'm going to feel bad if I don't. So let me find it. It's another wonderful stats Twitter account. Oh, no, have I lost it? Oh, no. Basically, it pulled out the, like, of the Big 12 coaches when it comes to out-of-bounds plays, as far as efficiency, Mike Boynton was 3. And we knew he was really good at it with out-of-timeouts and out-of-bounds plays, but he's 3. He is the 3rd best coach in the Big 12.
It was from @shot_quality.
Thank you. So there's 2. I put a little timeline together here of all the things that Boynton has dealt with. And look, you're going to deal with attrition. You're going to deal with players leaving. This list is not going to include all the players who have transferred out of this program. On March 24, 2017, Mike Boynton was named the head coach. On September 26th, 6 months later, the FBI investigation was announced into college basketball. Lamont Evans was named his top assistant. He was fired. The FBI investigation, 6 months into his tenure as head coach, has begun and is now hanging over the program. Remember, 6 months into his tenure as head coach, this whole time, except for 6 months, the FBI investigation has been hanging over his head and this program's head. Okay? Roughly 3 months later, junior Devon Dillard and Zach Dawson, one of those being the only guy that was in his first recruiting class, another guy who we all thought would be really fun and interesting and good, were dismissed due to repeated violations of the team's rules. So the only guy you brought on in that first recruiting class, he's gone now. One guy who's a contributor is gone. Significant roster attrition also with the team with 7 scholarship players at one point. At the end of the year, they lost 9 guys either who graduated, left early, dismissed, or transferred from the beginning of the year. So at the end of his first season, he had 9 guys gone. Cool. So let's jump to the next year, September 2018. Michael Weathers, the guy you brought in, he came from Miami, Ohio. He was like freshman of the year there. This is the guy who's going to be the stud. This is the guy who's going to help you turn this program around. He gets caught stealing a wallet at a bar. He's underage, by the way. And when the woman asks him to give it back, he refuses. They deal with the cops, have to be called. Literally, she said in an interview, she didn't want to get him in trouble because she was a fan of Oakland State basketball. And had he just given her the wallet back, everything would have been fine. But he was being a little bitch. January 8th, 2019, Mike Cunningham was a graduate transfer. A leg injury that kept him out of the first few games of the season. Been suspended, missed the rest of it. 8 days later, so you lost Cunningham. 8 days later, Michael Weathers, freshman, Maurice Kalou and Contravius Jones are all dismissed because they essentially shot up a car with BB guns at a party. Mike Boynton spent the rest of that season with nine scholarship players. October 2019, Marcus Watson was suspended from all activities of the Oklahoma State basketball team after allegations by an Oklahoma State student of rape. Played one game. He was gone. 2019 season, Isaac, the team's going really well. Isaac likely gets mono, misses a month, and takes another month to recover. Last year, also, we lost Chris Harris, who had torn his ACL. Now, he was cleared to play this season, but he's re-aggravated an old knee injury, and now he's having surgery. He's missing the rest of this year. Montreal Pena has left the team for personal reasons. Donovan Williams has had season-ending surgery. You've had more team players injured. Oh, by the way, COVID. It's year four for Mike Boynton. He has dealt with more shit than most coaches would deal with in a 20-year career. He's in year four. Shut up about he can't do it. We don't know if he can do it because he hasn't had a fair shot to do it from the get-go. The guy is lovable. He is awesome. He's great to talk to. He gives a shit. He recruits his butt off. He's a good coach. He continues to make moves all the time trying to make this team better. Let's all love the roster that he had his first three seasons in Stillwater, but let's not all act like that he took Kansas's roster for 3 years and screwed around with it. Okay, folks? Mike Boynton's a good coach. He's a good recruiter. He's a good man. He has dealt with more than his fair share of crap in Stillwater that, frankly, I would give maybe 10% of the blame to for this stuff. It's not his fault players get injured. It's not his fault that likely got mono. It's not his fault that kids decided to be boneheaded morons and screw around and have to all get kicked off of the team. We didn't even go through all the list of players who have transferred out for one reason or another. And if you're mad at every player that transfers out, you're implying that those players are all going to be great and how dare they leave. Shut up. He's here. He's the head coach. He's not going anywhere. You're sure as hell not going to bring somebody into the mess that Oklahoma State's dealing with the potential postseason ban this year. Probably going to be next year. The scholarship reduction is going to be going on in Stillwater. So just cram it. Sit back, root for the man, hope he can get a fair shot here, because I think if he does, this team might not only win, but be a hell of a lot of fun and pretty damn good.
And if you think you can find a coach that can win at Oklahoma State with the situation that we've seen, show him to me. Give me the name of the coach that could do it. No one f-ing can. Boynton has done more with the shitty roster and roster situations than any coach I can think of that could possibly do it. The fact that this team was able to win games at the end of season with eight scholarship players and all the roster attrition and play some of their best basketball in February tells me how damn good of a coach Mike Boynton is. And with the roster attrition he's dealt with this year too, the fact that it was even close against Baylor for about 35 minutes of that game on Saturday should tell you how good of a coach Boynton is. When guys saw Cade Cunningham and Rondell Walker warm up and then they leave the floor and they're not playing today, it could have been really easy for all of those guys to go, okay, let's just get out of here. Let's not get humiliated and let's move on. No, let's go win a ball game. That tells you the type of coach Boynton is, because he gets these dudes bought in right away. Bryce Williams is a perfect example of this. He talked about like losing his love of basketball when he was at Ole Miss. He was ready to just be done. He comes to Oklahoma State and that's revitalized. And you see the player that he is on the floor for Oklahoma State. He's one of the best players on this team. And he is one of the most fun players on this team. That's because Mike Boynton has instilled in this program. There has been a lot of bullshit that this guy's had to deal with. and he could sit back and go and make all of the excuses. No, he hasn't done any of that. He still goes out there because he knows his number one job is going to win a ball game and to build a program in Oklahoma State. He's still doing that in year four after this is the fourth year of roster bullshit that he's had to continually deal with. Like, you can make all the jokes you want. You can think he's a bad coach. You can wish that Oklahoma State had a better coach. Show me someone else who will be able to take the bullshit that he's had to deal with in stride and still win games. You can't, because no one else would.
So let's look ahead real quick. Now that we've both had our nice rant, and I've been working on my rant for like 3 days because I got all this research.
Mine was completely ad lib. That was a ton of fun.
Yes, it's ad libbing is fun. Putting together a list of I don't know what else you need to hear besides I could keep giving you information. I can tell you all the players that left. I can tell you how many players he's recruited are still here, and you can say, well, that's da da da, and I get all that, but like. Welcome to it. Here is the schedule for Oklahoma State's next seven games. At Iowa State on Monday night, Arkansas on Saturday, at TCU, Texas at home, at Kansas, it's not normal Kansas, Kansas State and Iowa State at home. Folks, I see four wins at least. You could get five out of that. Even without Cade, I don't think you guys understand how bad Iowa State is, and they are dealing with roster attrition and injuries as well. You can go to Iowa State. You can go to Hilton. Let me put it this way. Iowa State will be on the market for a new men's basketball coach in this season. You get Iowa State twice the next seven games. You get Kansas State at home. TCU's not that good. I understand what happened in Stillwater. They're not that good. You get Texas at home. Cage will be back by then. You get to go to Kansas. That's not easy, but they're not great. It's a winnable game. I'm not saying you're gonna. And you get Arkansas in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. And Arkansas is good, but Arkansas is not like Arkansas is not better than Oklahoma State. They might be on par, but you have by far the better player. You are 9-4. You're seventh in the conference. You're 3-4 in conference play. You have a real shot to go and win some games here. And I think they will. In this seven-game stretch, I think they can I'll make the prediction now. I think they go 4-3 in the next seven. And you say, well, that's not that impressive. I'd say, I don't really care. It's all about getting the NCAA tournament. And the Big 12 is probably going to get seven teams in. Every bracket you see has Oklahoma State in it. That's before they lost to Baylor. And guess what doesn't hurt you? Losing to number two Baylor, it ain't going to hurt your resume. Now, I'm not saying Oklahoma State's going to get a great seed, but you have more opportunities for wins. Go take advantage of them. You've Iowa State twice. You've got Kansas State and TCU on here. You've got Kansas and Texas. You get Texas at home. You've got Texas Tech at home. You've got two shots against Oklahoma. You get Arkansas, who's a solid program, who's going to help your resume. There are plenty of opportunities on here. Just go take care of them.
Yeah, and I think this team proved they can still compete and win ball games without Cade Cunningham. And like I said, they weren't
like anyone other than Baylor. I think they hang on and win that game.
You hang on, or at least it's really damn close at the end.
Yeah,
I believe Boynton said that it's a 50-50 shot that Cade plays on Saturday.
It's like at best 50-50. I don't think he plays.
Which tells me I don't think he plays. He maybe plays on Saturday against Arkansas. But you can go to Hilton.
You can well play on Saturday.
Yeah, you can go to Iowa State. They're bad and win with the roster you have right now, especially if Rondell Walker is able to play. And you can go and beat Iowa State on the road. And winning in Hilton, no matter how bad Iowa State is still tough.
Not when there's no fans
there. That's fair. Is there any fans there?
It's not full.
Okay. Because I know every school.
And I'll put it this way. The fan base doesn't care right now.
No, that's really bad.
If you want to know why Steve Prohm is going to get fired.
Yeah. Iowa State doesn't care about basketball, you know there's issues.
They're bad, and the fans – and this is not a shot at the fan base at all. I get it. They don't care right now.
That reminds me a lot of Travis Ford's last year in 2015-16. That was rough.
Yeah.
But, and then you get Arkansas, and if K can play in that game, that's another game Oklahoma State absolutely can win, especially because it's in GIA. And that's going to be a highly emotional game because I guarantee that's going to be an honoring Eddie Sutton type game. That's going to be a remember the 10 type, you know, honoring game. You know, that game is going to mean a lot. That's going to be a Curse of Cowboy game, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that is a Curse of Cowboy game.
And absolutely. Because I believe the 20th, yes, it will be Wednesday or Thursday next week is the 20th anniversary of the Remember the 10 plane crash. Yeah. So that's going to be a highly emotional game for a number of reasons. And that's game Oklahoma State absolutely can win regardless of what, you know, the capacity of GIA is. When you sneak a couple of these games in conference, you get Texas at home, who you gave it your damn best shot at early on as you're still trying to gel as a team. You go on the road at Kansas, like you steal one or two of those, you're setting yourself up really nicely for the tournament. Now, it's not going to be a top 7 seed, but you're an 8 or 9 seed in the Big 12 tournament. And history has shown, at least Boynton and his teams outside of maybe his second year, play some of their best basketball in February. And they're really hitting their stride at the end of the season.
Second year team was just bad.
Yeah, the second year team was just – that was rough. Yeah. But last year, that team was really starting to hit their stride. I don't think they were going to make the tournament, but at least make the NIT when that was looking dire in the middle of January.
Yeah.
And right now, you're solidly, at this point, 8, 9, 10 seed. That's dangerous. And when you have the best player, one of the best players in the country, fully ready to go – look out, everybody, because March is going to be chaotic this year, more chaotic than normal. If you plan on making a bracket, make it, and then just light it on fire because it doesn't matter. I'm not expecting this team to go deep into March. I think this is a team that could win a game in the Big 12, in the NCAA tournament, at least get to 32.
That's all anyone wants. Just win one game. If they can get there and win a game, like I know we all had high expectations with Kate, but like let's be honest about this roster and you're dealing with COVID and everything else that's going on. Again, you're down to even if Rondell Walker and Kate come back, you're at what? 9 of 13? You're still down 4 guys. That's 9. That's it. Like, it just sounds like, oh, that's a lot. It's not in college. Like, no. How much is this going to be the third straight year where Boynton has had to get to this point in the season and had 9 guys who can play? Good freaking heavens. Give them – who cursed him? Someone get him a rabbit's foot because this bullshit's got to come to an end. I don't know if we have to have a Ted Lasso kind of thing where everyone's got to go and burn something that's important to them, but we got to get this shit dealt with because it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm done with it. All right, we should probably wrap this up.
All right, do you have any final thoughts on this episode before we wrap up?
Yeah, the Big 12 released the 2021 college baseball schedule, so we have the conference schedule. And we know a few things about OSU's schedule from other people. I get the feeling, maybe even by the time this podcast goes up, we'll know what Oklahoma State's basketball schedule is for 2021. And you and I will figure out which series we're going to meet up at so we can go and enjoy the new Obrate Stadium. I am pumped.
Yes, and be on the lookout over the next week or so for an announcement based on a project I'm planning to do for the baseball season. So I'll tease it a little bit now. I'll talk a little more once I get some things finalized. But be on the lookout for that. I'm so excited for baseball season, man. Yeah. We are, I believe my calendar's telling me, 24 days until pitchers and catchers report for Major League Baseball. College baseball is right around the corner. It's going to be so much fun. I'm so excited.
That weekend of the 19th, 20th is the first weekend. College baseball.
Let's go. Oh, I'm so ready. All right, Philip. Where can everyone follow you on Twitter?
Only person at OKTXAR Poke. Of course, you can follow my show, the 1012 Podcast, TEM, the number 12, the word podcast, available pretty much in all the top places you can find a podcast.
Follow me at JT Penfield. Be sure to follow the main site at Cowboys RFF. We will be back on Thursday, another episode of the Short Porch Saloon. We'll talk to you all then.